Hi, this is Zoe Routh, and this is episode 6, How to Deal with the Trump Factor. We're waking up to a brave new world with a new president of the United States, and today we're going to explore what does that mean and what does that mean for us in terms of what we can do about it. Let's get into it.
Welcome to the Zoe Routh Leadership Podcast, your source of strategies and insights to make you a better leader. Influence, improve, inspire.
So, welcome. I've had a few days to ponder and read and reflect on the US election. As a Canadian living in Australia, with a sister who married an American and with American cousins, I feel very connected to the United States and to what this election actually means for us wherever we live in the world. And listening and reading and observing all the various reactions, I suppose, to the election has been tumultuous. There's obviously the Trump supporters who are elated and overjoyed that they're going to have a Republican government. And there are those who didn't support Trump, who are very anti-Trump, who feel very much despair, fear, confusion, and are worried about it. So we're going to explore a little bit of that and trying to seek a perspective on how to look at this new Trump world in a way that is useful for us and what we can take from it and what we can make useful for us through it. So before we get into that, just to lighten the mood a little, I'm always learning new things about Australian culture and Canadian dichotomies here in Australia. And the most recent one was when somebody turned to me and says, I can so tell you're Canadian because of the way that you call hockey, field hockey. I thought, what are you talking about? Field hockey, where I grew up in Canada, was what you played in the summer with sticks on a field. It was a summer sport. And hockey, minus the field reference, was what you did on the ice in the winter, kind of Canada's unofficial national sport. Lacrosse is actually Canadians' official national sport, but you would never know it by the popularity of ice hockey. And my Australian friend said, well, we actually call hockey ice hockey, and field hockey is hockey. So it's a bit of reverse thing there. No Canadian would say ice hockey, because hockey is the ubiquitous term for our national pastime. There you go. And the other sporting things get confusing, too. American football is called, by Australians, gridiron. I have no idea where that comes from. Soccer in Australia is soccer. And football, instead of being called the European soccer, is actually a word for rugby. And in Australia, there are three different types of rugby. Rugby union, rugby league, and Aussie rules, which is my personal favorite because it's such a fast and fun game. Anyway, little sporting differences in the common language that unites us across much of our globe. So a couple of news events. My new book, Moments, is actually coming out shortly. It's with the printer right now. It's going to be shipped to my house on Monday. You can get pre-order copies now for just $1 shipping, at zoerouth.com/books. So I'm pretty excited about this book. I think it's a good read, and it's a powerful read about how we can have courage to speak up, conviction in our message, and resolve to act, which is particularly important given what we're talking about today and our current global context. We have more and more need for people to express themselves and to be seen and heard and to advocate for the things that are important. Another piece of news, my wonderful event, Edge of Leadership, which is happening here in Canberra, March 28th, 2017, which sounds like a long way away but isn't, we've confirmed a couple new speakers, which is awesome. Peter Munday of Lennox Motors, Volkswagen Lennox Motors here in Canberra, is a huge entrepreneur and philanthropist. He has raised in the last 8 years over $4 million for various charities. He is an enormously generous man and a savvy businessman. And the thing is that when those two things combine, amazing things happen. At the recent Men's Link Big Night Out, he donated a a car to be auctioned off, and it raised over $50,000 for the charity in that one auction item. The whole event, which was his idea, raised over $100,000 for our little local charity, Men's Link. Amazing. So he is going to be showcased as a case study at the Edge of Leadership event. And we're just finalizing table hosts for the unconference. So it's an unconference, which means we're not just going to speak at people. We want the opportunity for people to really connect and engage and process the things that they're learning. So they don't just get fire hosed at all day and then walk away and going, well, what do I make of that? We want to give people the opportunity to process and learn and digest. So you can get all the details of that event at my website. Just click on zoerouth.com/work and you'll find the event listed there. And I'll put a link in the show notes. And the show notes are zoerouth.com/podcast/6. So one of the things that I've been reading that is helping me with processing what the election means to us is the book by Dan Gregory and Kieran Flanagan called Selfish, Scared, Stupid. And it's about how to use the power of human nature to influence. And the premise is this, is that all of us are inherently selfish for good reasons, because it comes down to survival. We're scared because change can be threatening, and we're stupid because we want the simple things. We want the simple, lazy, easy way. And Dan and Kieran say, why go against human nature? Why not speak to that in terms of your influence and use it to your advantage to change behavior, either your own or other people's? And Dan asserts this is exactly why Trump has been so successful in the United States, because he spoke to those three core elements of many people throughout the United States. People are selfish in that they are confronting very serious survival needs. Their way of life has been degrading. They have had difficulty making ends meet. So they really are in survival mode. And a lot of his messages spoke and resonated exactly with that. They're scared because they don't know if their way of life can come back to equilibrium. They don't know if the great American dream is possible. And so that's why the whole message of make America great again was something that they latched on. Many latched onto because they felt that this ideal was tarnished, lost, decaying, evasive. And so the promise of hope with this is something that people really resonated with who are at that stage. And stupid, well, many people said that Trump voters are stupid. I don't necessarily believe that. 50 million people voted for the Republicans. I can't believe that 50 million people are stupid. What I can believe is that every single person who did end up voting, even though it's only half of eligible voters in the United States, all voted for hope. No matter which party they voted for, each person who bothered to cast a vote did so on the basis that they wanted something better. It just so happens they either picked a Democrat or a Republican or a Libertarian or other voter as the vehicle to find, to express or give that hope some legs. So I think that's the common ground in terms of shaping perspective that we can reach for, is to understand that every person who voted did so on the basis of hope and the thought of something better. Did some people vote because they hate, because of hate, because they're protesting against one candidate or another? Possibly. And in all of that still is an essence or an element of hope. So if they thought they were voting in protest, it's because they thought that was going to give them hope of something better. So I find that a comforting thought, that at the end or at the bottom of all of that, that is the one thing that unites all of the voters, the hope for something better. How it gets articulated is where we come down into conflicts of opinion. Another way of exploring perspective around this is a developmental perspective. And Spiral Dynamics by Don Beck, do I have the book here now in front of me? Beck and Cowan, I believe, wrote Spiral Dynamics. I'll list that in the show notes for you. And what Spiral Dynamics talks about is the evolution of cultural values and norms across different societies. And they map sort of an evolution of perspectives that respond to different contexts. And so they point out that some of the emerging tribes or tribalism, there's particular characteristics or perspectives on the world that we have when we're in a society that is in survival mode, say, for example. And when we're in tribalism, it's us against the rest of the world for the basis of safety. So we need to be protectionist because we have a lot of threats against us. And so when we're in that sort of stage of development or in that context, we have different behaviors and attitudes that shape how we operate in the world to keep us safe. Now, they go on to explain that as context shifts and becomes more connected, so do worldviews and perspectives. And we can have a look at see how there's actually conflicts of perspective depending on where people's contexts are. And it's quite fascinating to look at the two coastal strips, the East and West coastal strips, who were largely Democrat in their voting trends versus the Midwest or the center of the country, which were largely Republican in terms of their perspective. And if you think what's going on for those two regions, the center versus the coast, you can see how it's reflected in their worldview. This is my perspective on it anyway, is that there's a lot of prosperity and opportunity happening on the coastal regions. The Midwest is where traditionally we've had manufacturing, which has collapsed, and the economy there has been, well, stymied, decaying, not that good. And so you have these two different contexts happening within the one large country. One is about opportunity and growth and globalism and connectivity, which expressed as in New York or LA, etc. These are very much global progressive centers, whereas the Midwest is basically experiencing a reverse trend. And with that, it shapes how people, they're immersed in their context. So as such, they respond to that in different ways. If people feel that their way of life is threatened, they tend to go into survival mode. So it's not surprising then that they resonated with the Trump message, as I said earlier. So it's helpful to understand that and in sort of making sense of how this result actually happened. And what I see is that this is perhaps a tipping point of perspectives. You have protectionism, duality, and nationalism on the one side, which is all about survival. And then we have the global, world-centric, inclusive perspective on the other, which is all about progression and unity. And they are... they're kind of equally distributed if you looked at the number of voters in terms of actual numbers of who voted for what. And really, the gravity of the country, of the United States, could go one way or the other, depending on how we end up showing up and having this discourse. So if more noise, I guess, goes to protectionism, then that is going to shift the tipping point. If more noise goes and expression goes to inclusivity and world-centric views and really working on that, then that will shift the tipping point. That's a very simplistic view, and there's a lot of other global issues that will come into play with this. And yet, here is the opportunity for us as individual leaders is how are we going to shape the tipping point? Which way are we going to help build the gravity? Are we going to do it in a way that puts us versus them, kind of duality, protectionism way of going about things? Or are we going to do it as an inclusive perspective that we're all in this together and that we need to work for a more cohesive, collaborative, compassionate world? I kind of vote for the latter. I believe that we can actually build a better world when we work in it together. So I'm stumping up to bat for that side of things, if you like, and I hope that you might consider doing the same. Another perspective I read on Facebook by Cindy Wigglesworth, and Cindy wrote this great book called SQ21, The 21 Skills of Spiritual Intelligence, which is really about advanced emotional intelligence. And people were waiting for her and asking her to put her perspective on the election results, and I think she had an excellent summary, and she said, you know, this is really an opportunity for us to explore shadow, because a lot of what was expressed through the Trump campaign is shadow-like perspective. What do we mean by shadow? It's like the dark side of our human nature. When we express hate towards another person or another culture or another country, this is our shadow side. Hate is the shadow of love. And it doesn't delegitimize that sentiment. It is something that is within all of us. And yet, as integrated people, we can choose whether or not we want to live through hate or live through love. And so as we see the shadow side of ourselves being given a lot of airtime and attention through the Trump campaign, and now that he's president, or is president-elect, sorry, now that he's very visible, the weight of authority may give it more legitimacy, which is what most people who are against the Trump ideals are concerned about, is that racism and sexism and making it okay to assault women, all that being given airtime and visibility and the weight of authority in a presidency is what people are afraid of, is that it will give license to shadow to become vindicated. And I think what Cindy talks about is that when we bring shadow to be looked at in full light, as opposed to hiding it under the carpet or letting it just bubble as an undercurrent, then it gives us an opportunity to really confront it and to deal with it and to ask ourselves, is this the kind of world we want to live in? And this is now front and center for all of us. I think when the weight of the political discourse was more on the Democratic side, there was an assumption that this was the better way of doing things, you know, to be inclusive, to be accepting. And yet, there's a huge amount of shadow at play, which is based on black and white perspectives and so on. So this opportunity to explore shadow, to bring it to life, to surface it, to address it, is the opportunity in this election, I believe. So that we can actually talk openly that, yes, people do have these kinds of fears of the other. Racism is basically born from the fear of the other and seeking to blame others for circumstances. And it's all come out of fear of loss, fear of being left behind. We see this in the Brexit vote. We see this in the election of Pauline Hanson and the One Nation Party here in Australia. So what can we learn from all this? And I think probably the critical thing as leaders is that we need to meet people where they are. So it's so easy to be disparaging and dismissive. Certainly, I know I find that as an easy default, going, they're just crazy lunatics, uneducated so-and-sos. And that's not a very helpful perspective. That is actually not an inclusive perspective at all. So as leaders, I think we need to meet people where they are. And if that person shows up as someone who is racist, we need to understand what's driving that. Fear of the other, etc. Does not mean that we condone it or that we accept that perspective necessarily as acceptable. We need to understand it first, though. Homophobia also is based on the desire to impose order on the world, to have rules for things to be black and white. That's acceptable, that's not acceptable. And that desire to have rules is a fundamental desire for safety. When we have rules, it makes people feel safe. It means like we understand how the world works. This is how it works. Now, what the problem is with that, of course, is that it makes some people right and some people wrong. And we don't want to do that. So we don't want to make people right or wrong. And the problem with having black and white rules is that when you live and see the world as a rainbow, you are on the outer. And then we have divisiveness and we have exclusion, which is not how we build a prosperous, dynamic, inclusive, robust, and resilient society. So anything that's divisional is actually exclusive, and that does not help us build anything successfully. So what can we learn from this? Meet people where they are, understand their perspective, not necessarily condone it, and then we can help deal with the root issues. So if the root issue around homophobia and racism is fear, then let's talk to that fear. Let's park the negative expression of the fear and look to help to reassure people that an inclusive society is actually a safer society than one that is exclusive. That's where we can focus as leaders. The other thing I think we can learn from this is that we never win an argument by making other people wrong. Ever been in an argument saying you're wrong and think, oh yeah, you're absolutely right. I come around to your way of thinking. The more that we say you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong, the more people get defensive and entrenched in their views. So we can't make people wrong. We actually need to look beyond their argument and strive to see the human being underneath or behind the vitriol. Now, this is extraordinarily difficult when what's coming out of the human being's mouth is something that we find abhorrent in terms of the expression of the ideas and the sentiment behind it, i.e. racism or homophobia or whatever it is. To reach for that place where we can see the human being behind the vitriol is an exercise in deep compassion. The way that I try and do this is trying to imagine that person as they once were, as an innocent baby, before they had all these mental and social constructs developed within them and being expressed as an adult. It's incredibly hard. However, once I find that I'm able to do that, it helps me remember that they are a human being with wants and desires and fears and hopes. And that's the part of them I hope to connect with in helping them let go of the things that are perhaps divisive. So that's how I strive to be an influencer, is to first to reach for the perspective of them as a human being, and then gently be able to help see and guide them through a perspective that is more inclusive, that will eventually serve them better anyway. Does it work? Don't know necessarily that it's going to be a winner. However, I do know that by condemning and adding to divisiveness is not going to help. So I think if we continue to seek to understand, continue to seek to see people as human beings, then we are adding good things to the collective human context. And I think that is something worthy of standing up for and worthy of doing. Do we need to also deconstruct the messages of hate? Yes, we do. And the way that we do that is by constantly juxtaposing those messages with messages that offer a different kind of hope. So if we keep doing that, we can hope that we can bring people into an inclusive world, a compassionate world. So for you, what I'd love you to do is to reflect on what matters most to you. What values do you actually hold really close to your heart? What's important to you? Where do you see these values being expressed well in the world, and to celebrate that? And where do you see these values being denied, and to bring those to light? I think all of us can show leadership by speaking up, by expressing our truth as best we can without making other people wrong, and being able to tease out their arguments and perspectives, even if they're flawed and deeply so. We cannot reject other human beings fundamentally. We need to search for that kernel of goodness within them to find a hope of bridging the two perspectives. Another action for leadership is to celebrate the people who model integrity and love and compassion, and showcase them and showcase why it's important that these people are doing well in the world and that they are models for us to follow and emulate, excuse me. I think probably the last message, and I'll take it from Cindy Wigglesworth, is just deal with what's in front of you one day at a time. We don't know how this is all going to play out. We don't know which way the world is going to tip. However, if we put out good messages of compassion and love and understanding and strive for a more inclusive, compassionate world, this will add to the weight of balance to a more inclusive, peaceful world. And that is what I'm holding as my intention and as my calling card for leadership from this day and every day forward. So I'd love to hear your perspective. This is a big topic, obviously, and every perspective is welcome. Please leave a note, a comment in the show notes. Sorry, not in the show notes. Comment on the podcast page. I'd love to hear what you have to say about things. I'm going to list all the book titles I mentioned on the show notes page, which is zoerauth.com/podcast/6. And yeah, keep talking, keep sharing, keep feeling, and we'll make our way through this. Live well, lead well.